Welcome to the Cognitive Rampage. I'm Adam Lowry, and these are the issues.
Welcome, Tribe, to the Cognitive Rampage. I'm lucky today to have my wife, Jennifer Lowry, join me on a quick issues discussion today. I appreciate you joining me, my beautiful wife.
Well, hello there.
You're a nurse practitioner, and for all of you that don't know, ARMP is not a registered nurse, is actually a master's level certified version, right,
of nursing. Are a registered nurse.
Oh, well, yeah, you're a registered nurse.
With a master's degree, we can treat patients like similar to how a physician can treat patients, although we, you know, don't have surgery practices where we perform brain surgery on our own, things like that. We do work in a collaborative practice for the most part, especially in the state of Florida and other parts of the United States. We can have our own practice and treat people in a family practice setting and other settings as well.
And that's what a lot of people don't know, that a nurse practitioner is generally, that's the nurse that you're seeing many times when you're not seeing the doctor. I would like to say that the nurse practitioners carry a lot of the weight around hospitals, private practices, et cetera.
Yes, that is true. Also, our cohorts in the physician assistant realm also do similar careers as us and do the same thing also. So I have to give them some credit as well.
Yeah, for sure. So those of you that understand what a physician's assistant is, there's a PA, they do similar skills to what a nurse practitioner does. They handle a lot of the same responsibilities within practices, except the education isn't quite the same, right? A nurse practitioner, what, they have a 4-year in nursing? Is that how that works?
We have a master's plus, degree.
Plus a master's,
so
right.
Basically 6 years, plus our clinical time. It's just a different education route. At the end, we pretty much do the same thing.
Okay, yeah. So I just wanted to give you all the background on my wife. And you've been, what, in practice almost a decade, if you count all the RN time, right?
Yes, I started my medical career in 2001 as an x-ray tech and medical assistant, moved up through nursing through there, and now I'm here as a nurse practitioner.
Oh, you're such a champ. I love her. She is so amazing. And she did that raising a beautiful daughter at the same time. So talk about a champion mom. I'm shouting it out to you there, wifey.
No, thank you.
You are. You're amazing. Now, we talk a lot, you know, about medical practice, mental health practice. Being I'm sort of in the mental health world in a sense, and you're definitely in the medical field. You research all the time, you study all the time. I don't know. I mean, I live with you, so I'm biased. So I don't know too many people that are dedicated, you know, to the field as I've seen you dedicated since I've known you. And we talk a lot about insurance coverage, practitioners' approaches, and, you know, certain things we deal with or have dealt with and you deal with on a constant being in the actual emergency room.
That's correct. Yep, we deal with a lot down there.
Yeah, we chat a lot about things too. So today's issue, what I wanted to cover, you and I have been talking the last couple of days about it, and I thought it's been a very interesting conversation. On the notes I have written down, I call it, I wanted to call this issue Humane Society. Based on the idea, are we a humane society by how we offer certain healthcare services, be that medical and mental health, both? But for those listening, this isn't about some lengthy discussion that we're going to have talking about free medical service versus privatized medical service. This is the realm I want to stay out of in this issue. The closest issue that, you know, the pinpoint issue that I want to focus here, and you're probably on the show, like you said, to keep me on focus. So I would talk about the actual issue and the focused one. And so you brought home a notion the other day of something that you were learning I thought was interesting, that insurance companies are calling overutilization. And it struck me, this idea of overutilization as being a reason why insurance companies now are kind of locking down on some offices, some doctors, some ERs, et cetera, on how many services they're giving away, right? Can you explain overutilization a little bit?
Well, pretty much, it's in the title, overutilization of a service. Say we have 10 people come in and they all want back x-rays in the emergency room. most of the time people would get a back x-ray, but insurance companies and providers are now going, wait, we can't just do this. We're creating a society of the candy store medical world, if you will. Well, somebody can walk into somewhere and go, I want that, give it to me. Where we have to now hone down on that and go, okay, wait, there's some criteria that we have to evaluate you on to determine if this is really a need for you to have that service. Because insurance companies, in my opinion, are going, wait a minute, that person really didn't need that x-ray. But now we've got to, you know, reimburse for that when you could have evaluated them, treated them based on their symptoms, and the outcome would have been the same.
Okay. So overutilization, in a summary, is this idea that users of the health services are basically showing up, you know, feeling entitled to every which service that exists, and demanding x-rays for hangnails, right?
We do see a lot of people coming in, especially, you know, little things like I stubbed my toe. Now I got to come in for, you know, a complete foot and ankle evaluation when your big toe hurts. You know, that's part of the overutilization, where people come in and they expect a service like that. And us as providers feel like, okay, I have to make my patient happy. I know their, you know, toe is going to be just fine. And it's probably not broken. It's not bruised. It's barely tender. But you know what? My patient needs to be happy, so give me a good score. So let's go ahead and get that x-ray anyways. I mean, that's where our hands are kind of tied in that service.
Yeah, I mean, we are, in a sense, an entitled and enabled society, especially if you feel like, I mean, mind you, if people are paying astronomical insurance costs, which they are, we all agree, you know, I want to make sure that we're not pointing out too much of who's in the wrong, right? Because we all are, in our own sense, from practitioners Absolutely. To insurance companies to us society as a whole, to the marketing companies selling and pushing drugs and pushing the ideas that you're sick all the time, to Google doctors, I call them, you know, that are researching certain things and proving themselves to have disorders, to widening spectrums and mental health diagnosis manuals. I mean, there's all kinds of variables that are playing into the fucked up issue of what mental and medical health care is. But the overutilization, I thought, was an interesting term for insurance companies to begin to coin, to really basically say that, look, we're paying out for a lot of shit that we don't think we should be paying for. Meanwhile, the people paying the high premiums are feeling entitled to those services, regardless if it's a stubbed toe or not. And what I don't think those people realize they're doing is they're backing up an emergency room and a system for these things that are not life or death. Emergency rooms are for, you know what, emergencies, right? I mean, there's so many other options rather than taking a $5,000 ambulance ride, covered or not, on your insurance, you know, to get you to a hospital for a stubbed toe or for a sick stomach, right? And so there's many variables. I'm just trying to point out all of the different people that and places and ideas and policies and reasons and structures that play into this idea of overutilization. But I think that's where I kind of wanted to focus, is that reason, you know, that this idea of people, why are they feeling so, I don't want to say entitled to these services, I guess the high prices are, but needing to be so overreactive to basic things that happen in life, like stubbed toes, like blisters, like things that don't require emergency rooms, especially for their kids, right? Because I you don't have to say anything, but I would say it, that I see it. People, their kid falls down and it's like, let's run them to the ER, work up a CT scan and a million other things, you know, and the kid just had to fart, you know? I mean, so that overutilization is what that really is entailing, right? That people are demanding services and they don't need them.
You know, there's a lot of factors involved in why this is, but all in all, we have created a culture of this society where anything happens, they have to figure out if something is really wrong with them. Instead of going, you know, let me just use my common sense here. You know, I've just had a little bit of indigestion for a couple of days. I'm 20 years old. It's probably normal. you know, I'm just going to kind of take a Pepsid and see if it goes away. And if I need further care after that, then I'll go in. But, you know, we've definitely created this society of, you know, where people have to know if something is really, really wrong with them. You know, they fear the worst.
Yeah, that fear, right?
Right. Fear the worst.
You speak, they fear the worst, right? And, you know, I would definitely, Pete, it's a fine line between preventative medicine, right, and reactive medicine, right? Some people may argue with my point here or yours that, you know, they're just being preventative in what it is, right? And so I guess it is hard, really, to draw that line for those that are uneducated that do just type something in like belly pain into Google. God forbid you start to believe the first few things you read with belly pain, right? So all of this is marketed toward people. It's just push drug commercials, pharmaceutical companies, depression commercials, all of these things that are pushing people to feel this fear. And then they either don't have insurance, can't afford insurance, million reasons and issues there, but then they just run to the ER and it's backing up right now. In ERs, don't people get slotted into what's considered to be really important or
right.
not?
There is an acuity scale that people are put in, you know, 1 through 5, 5 being, you know, the least critical, you know, like suture removals, rechecks on, you know, a cut, you know, things like that, that, you know, aren't super critical. And then you have your ones where, you know, somebody is dying. So we have a lot of 4s and 5s coming in to the emergency room where if there were better access to healthcare, those 4s and 5s could go to their physician's office or, you know, an urgent care or something, you know, to not clog up the emergency room. But, you know, it's all about access to healthcare, I think. And, you know, we can delve into, you know, having that provided to everybody. But like I said before, we've definitely created this society of, oh my God, I think I have to find out if something is terribly wrong with me right now.
Right. And the access is a big word because, you know, access and ability, you know, somebody may have an access or don't know that they have access to, heck, they have the little treatment things inside the Walgreens and CVS that you can go if you got a sore throat or something, mm-hmm. you know, and it's like $85, you know, but what ends up happening is people feel they don't have any other option. They don't have, you know, insurance at any cost or then heck, they may not even have a ride to the CVS, right? But somehow they get a ride to the ER. They'll go to the ER with some basic symptoms of, and a couple of days would be gone, whether that's a turned ankle a little bit or, you know, something light and get these services, but they know the bill's going to be astronomical. So most, I don't want to say most, but a lot of people that do go in decide, you know what, I'm not even paying this fucking bill anyway. More than likely because they're already in debt, suffering this shit ass economy and trying to get ahead. And so now then they know they're going to get a $1,200, $1,500 bill from the ER. They don't care about paying it anyway, but that not paying that bill does roll back onto people, right? And not to mention, you know, the ER does get clogged up. I mean, let's say everyone does have healthcare, right? If this fear that you see on a daily, right, exists that everyone thinks they're sick or something's wrong, they got to check it. If this is true, and then all of a sudden insurance is null and void and, you know, access to everybody, how busy is the ER going to be? How busy is the doctor's office going to be? When people now know that it's not $3,000 bill they won't have to worry about paying. And how about this, when it really is entitled to them?
You know, it's hard to say what that outcome will be.
It's scary.
I haven't done enough research on other countries who have that universal healthcare to kind of see what kind of predicament they're in. Although I've heard that, you know, there are long wait times to see doctors.
Yeah, they definitely are.
But their culture is different. Also, our culture here in the United States is different than other countries where we do run to the doctor for any little thing that's wrong with us. But again, I haven't done enough research on how the culture is in other countries, you know, although I do know it's slightly different.
Yeah, you're right. You know, and I don't want to sound like I'm an advocate for or against healthcare and socialized medicine of any fashion. I'm just pointing out different variables here. I'm not taking a stand to be clear with anybody. I'm just talking about, you know, it. And I, you know, I met it vaguely rushed, you know, goes by my mind. I met a guy, he was the general manager to three or four of the largest Hiltons down in, I want to say, Puerto Rico. I think it was. And really cool guy. And we just sat down and talked for a brief moment. And they had brought in socialized medicine. You know, Bill Clinton had talked about it first thing in his time. And the lawnmower guys driving by. Two of them. Isn't that awesome?
That's great.
That's awesome.
Don't get distracted.
So, and no, see, she's here to keep me straight. No, but he specifically talked about where they brought in socialized medicine because they were such a Bill Clinton fan. They brought it all in so quickly, and they still offered very expensive health care as well, you know, to those that could afford it on top of it. But no matter what price you paid, expensive or not, or had the free socialized health care, when you showed up in an ER or a doctor's office, you were standing in the same line. You know, you didn't get moved ahead. There wasn't anything spectacular about it. You know, in the lines, and he talked about how their culture had turned to everybody thought something was wrong. The slightest anything, they would be at the thing trying to check it out. You know, and because also, you know me, there's parts of me too that's open for socialized medicine. I like to talk about if we are all on an island and one person had this tree of magic fruit, and if you ate it, everything that was wrong with you, you know, was fine. Could this person say, I found the tree and therefore you got to give me stuff before I give you the only tree here that keeps you alive? You know, there's a humanity part. That's why I was going to call it humane society, right? You know, and then there's, like you talk about, you know, people perform the services, right? They got to get paid for what they're doing, right? The taxpayers are paying for it.
New technology comes out, new CAT scans, new x-ray machines, hospital employees, hospital workers, you know, all of these people have to get paid somehow. So in a sense, something has to cost something. Well, does it need to be this astronomical price of what it is today?
Of course not.
Probably not. You know, the drugs and how expensive they are, how expensive services are, it probably doesn't need to cost as much as it does, especially when a insurance company can negotiate their price with, say, an MRI place on what they're going to pay them to reimburse them. If that's negotiable, then anything is negotiable.
Yeah. And mind you, the doctors too are painted in a corner because the happy sue motherfuckers out there, you know, that sue everybody for anything, you know, remember, the doctor's trying to help you out, and we all make mistakes to a certain point in our practice of some kind, right? We're all working at an art form here, a scientific based art form, but you know, the happy sue people, that sue for the slightest issues, right? So they're, you know, taking these doctors to court, taking these hospitals to court, and many times need to be. I don't want to discount that because sometimes it needs to be taken care of. That's why you have insurance. That's why they do it. But they're so happy sued, right? And doctors are terrified of being sued that if this patient comes in and demands an x-ray or CT for a stubbed toe, even though, you know, they're checking out not necessary, and you don't give it to them, well, fuck, you may get sued. You may get a bad review written up about you. And this leads us to the second part of the overutilization that we were talking about, you know, is how the doctors are reimbursed. That, you know, sure, the doctors are handing out the x-rays left and right, A, because they want to please the patient, but, you know, they also get paid for it. They get a fee for doing the service. So now the insurance companies are going, hey, slow down. Then the doctors are going, well, we're just making them happy. And hell, they're showing up terrified. Sure, they have to now, right? And they're showing up terrified because of marketing, social constructs, pressures, etc., with an entitled attitude as well, with you better treat me, not knowing that it's backed up, it's busy for all these reasons, you know. And doctors now are being told to slow down and don't just start handing out the x-rays, don't just start handing out the services anymore. They're being pressured by insurance companies too. What fuck to be a doctor? I got my insurance company on the backside telling me stop giving away services, basically telling me stop getting paid, knowing that if you do that, now your customer, your client is going to be pissed off with you because they're already entitled and terrified anyway. So as a doctor, practitioner, nurse practitioner, whatever, you have to walk that fine line of knowing, you know, the CT scan or whatever is clearly not necessary. and trying to educate that type of demographic, that ill-informed demographic, while also being pressured to meet quotas, bottom lines.
Quotas, bottom lines, and now patient satisfaction scores are a big part of how hospitals and providers are reimbursed. So a lot of people are sent home surveys from, you know, their doctor's offices, you know, hospitals, you know, asking how their care was, how they were treated, how, you know, basically how satisfied were they with the service? Because now, you know, technically we are now a service industry. Above and beyond being a medical industry, we're a service industry. And so if consistently there are bad scores, the reimbursement is a lot lower. So you can have a, you can have a provider not be as great as a medical provider, but had excellent customer service. That person is going to get awesome scores. Whereas if you had someone save your family member's life, perform CPR, brought them back from the dead, but their customer service skills were lacking, that group may get poor customer, a poor survey skill or a poor survey score. And so it's kind of hard to determine that fine line of what do I do? Man. How do I try to educate my patient on why I shouldn't overutilize things, why they may not need that, you know, lower back x-ray because of a muscle spasm, or, you know, how do I do that and also maintain having a really amazing patient satisfaction score?
And we all know who we're more, people are more apt to write a negative review 10 times more than they are a positive review. And now some people may first have heard you, you know, and their first reaction is, well, yeah. Yeah, pay the doctor on how well I think they treated. But the problem is you're not the fucking doctor. You know, so we're now they're going to pay, you know, practitioners. You know, it sounds good at first. It does. But when we understand how people really do write reviews based on some small, dumb things, rarely write good ones. And now they're not even professionally trained in what should take place. And so they demand the x-ray because WebMD told them to, or they demand the prescription because Google told them to. And then they come in there. And if you as the practitioner go, look, you're way the fuck out of line here. This is the wrong treatment. And you treat them properly against their demands. Well, then they just write a bad review about you. And then now you make bad grades. And now all of a sudden we're not rewarding those that are really trying to be helpful.
And healthcare advocates based on evidence-based research.
Fuck.
A lot of us are trying to do the right thing by our patients by using our evidence-based research and how we are to treat people. And in turn, oftentimes we may not get a score at all, which are a lot of times when people are satisfied, they don't ever fill out that survey. And a lot of times when people don't get what they want or they're really dissatisfied, they'll fill out that survey in the most negative form. Then you have your middle of the road people where they'll fill out, oh, okay, it kind of was okay, you know. But it all comes back to going, our hands are kind of tied in what we do, all while trying to do the right thing by our patients and trying to educate as well. It's going to take a long time for this overutilization to come to play and educating our patients and population, also while trying to make people happy with their care.
Yeah, and you know, we can stand back, you know, from this conversation very easily and say, look, it's the whole system designed, you know, that's fucked, that's causing all of these symptoms. And right now, overutilization, et cetera, these are symptoms and we're trying to put Band-Aids over top of a completely out of whack system. I mean, I think we can all agree to that on some notion and some level, you know, and that includes the Sue Happy people, all of it, you know, all of the ambulance chasing lawyers, all of that shit is included in this whole system being screwed, you know, from which way. And that's even tied into political campaigns and everything else. You know, I don't think pointing out who's at fault so much is what, you know, people should be concentrating on. It seems to be that's what the media is concentrating on, you know, side blaming, etc.
Right. People do that side blaming a lot when really it's about us as a medical community educating our patient population in the right way, and doing it in a nice way also, without telling people that, no, you're wrong. You know, it's more of a, hey, let's work together on this. Let me just explain to you why I'm doing what I'm doing or not doing what I'm doing.
Yeah. I never quite understand why people are completely, when they show up with a practitioner in the medical or mental health field, why they're automatically on guard, right? I see a few people where it's automatically, you know, doctor versus patient. And I like the attitude of questioning. I do, but you can question and be on the team, right? You know, you can be prepared and ask questions, you know, but don't come in as if you're the physician, you know, as if you're the practitioner and you're going to know more of what's happening because you've been researching for a couple months, you know, or even a year, shit, you know? So, I mean, I think all of us have a fault in it somehow. You know, we've allowed it to get to a certain point. We've allowed our healthcare system to be so poorly ranked. I mean, it's pathetic. It's awful, if you ask me. And as the humanitarian, you know, I see that the top end healthcare should be provided for the rich as it is provided for the poor. You know, if the technology exists as a species for us to keep it from somebody, and not allow life to extend or suffering to stop, well, then that's a humanitarian issue in my frame. But we are where we are, this capitalistic rigged society, to a point that we've gotten ourselves into, and we have to find our way out. And I think it does, you're right, I think it does start with the education of us as patients, because at one time, or that's my pug making those sounds, at one time or another, we will all be a patient. Let's face that. We'll all be a patient at our end, and we'll be at some time in our life. And I think it's important for us to, I think, focus on the idea of being better patients, you know, and being patient and waiting for the lawnmowers to drive by and let the first one go and the second one behind them as if they're racing. And understanding, I think, being a better patient is understanding what the doctors are going through, understanding that it's really insurance that's fucking you from the beginning, and the creation of it. But outside of that, we all play our role. We all play our part. So for the doctors out there, the nurses out there, the nurse practitioners out there, the psychologists, the picket in the health science field that are trying to do the best for their patients while also not overutilizing the system and learning more toward educating the patients, then we commend you for what you're doing, and please keep that up. We get that pressure. We understand the pressures you're in. It's not all your fault either. And for the misinformed and uneducated patient that has been completely marauded by advertising of pharmaceutical companies and depression companies and everything else, you know, so get educated, get informed. We just want to let you know about this issue, you know, that's happening with overutilization of medical services, and the corners doctors, nurses, and practitioners, etc., alike are painted in. And that's a corner, and it's a big issue. It's a big issue out there. We got to be better patients. Wifey, I love you. You're so much smarter than me. Thank you for making me sound smart on the show.
You're welcome. All in all, we just have to work better as a healthcare team. Patients and practitioners alike, and we can get things done in an efficient and safe manner.
Oh, I agree. I appreciate everybody. I want to tell you all about another podcast to check out. It's my buddy Chris Fisher and Jesse Cage in the F&K podcast. You can look them up on iTunes, Stitcher, a bunch of other places, fisherandcage.com as well. But I love those guys, man. They've been really kind to me, and we love you here at the Rampage. But check out the F&K podcast. All right, fellas. Love you. Peace. Bye. Tribe of Change. This has been The Issue. Spread the word. Tell everybody. Be a better patient. Let's build a more humane society, huh?